You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The University of Toronto has a newly rebranded building, the Monk Centre of Global Affairs. It's named after Peter Monk, founder and chairman of the world's largest pure gold mining company, Barrick Gold. Monk donated $20 million to the university with the promise of further monetary installments. Jacob Nierenberg is a doctoral student in anthropology at the U of T, and he's an organizer with the Monk Out of U of T campaign, and we've reached him by phone today in Toronto. Hello, Jacob.
Hello.
Your research background is largely focused on West Papua on the island of New Guinea, and Barrick Gold has been widely criticized for its mining operation in Papua New Guinea. Tell me about those criticisms.
That's part of the reason that I originally got interested in this issue, having worked previously with a human rights NGO in West Papua and sort of seeing the history there of people suffering a lot of violence because of an American mining company that totally changed the political situation of West Papua. So on the Papua New Guinea side, politically it's a different issue, but you have the same pattern of mining companies, this time from Canada, and Barrick Gold in particular, really dictating the political environment and creating a very violent situation where local people get dispossessed and live on very toxic land and can no longer really sustain themselves and face state violence in cases of where they express any resistance. So really I first got alerted to the issue when there was a mining injustice conference a few years ago in Toronto, and Jethro Tullin, who's one of the representatives from the community in Porgera in Papua New Guinea, came to Toronto and spoke at the Barrick AGM and spoke at this conference, and I sort of realized that I needed to get involved in this campaign because some of this money was funding my education.
Now, Barrick Gold is listed on the Dow Jones Index for Corporate Social Responsibility. How does that label fit with your description of their operation?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't even know if I'd go so far as to call it greenwashing. I mean, Barrick has lobbied, you know, most recently, strenuously lobbied against a bill that went before Parliament that would have prevented Canadian resource companies from receiving export development credits if they were committing, you know, human rights and environmental violations. So, and Barrick very strongly lobbied against that, and that contributed to the bill getting defeated narrowly. So, essentially, in Barrick's point of view, the corporate social responsibility theme is a way of saying we don't want any government to interfere with us. We're going to use all our resources to make sure that no one interferes with us, and we're going to sort of decide what's best. To give you a little example of one of many, if you go on the website for Barrick and look at some news from their operations at Porgera in Papua New Guinea, they tell you that they've considered alternatives to dumping toxic cyanide tailings straight into local water, but they've decided that it's not feasible, and they'll keep thinking about it.
Let's go to look now at the donation to build the Monk Center of Global Affairs. Or the new, I guess they just rebranded it. It isn't a new building, is that correct?
Yeah, so it's a whole package deal, basically. And Barrick gets all kinds of great benefits from this deal, including getting to brand this old heritage building in a prominent space on campus at a time when you know, other groups on campus are getting shifted around and kicked out of their buildings, departments are getting shut down, everyone's telling us there's not enough money to afford, you know, even certain departments to keep existing. But the Monk Foundation, which is headed by Peter Monk, gets to, you know, essentially have a say in university policy and priorities, circumventing, you know, all our decision-making bodies. And have this great building. It's going to have a right-wing think tank in it. There's federal and provincial money and university money that is sort of matching funds for the donation, the so-called donation by the Monk Foundation. And we see our university being corporatized.
Well, what kind of process took place around the decision for the donation to be approved in the first place?
Well, that's a good question, because that's one of our complaints, is that precisely the normal democratic, at best, it's already a facade of democracy, the way our university works. There's something called the Governing Council, and the president of the university and the chair and the vice chair of the council. This sort of executive layer of the council is, in theory, is responsible, has to be accountable to Governing Council for decisions such as, naming and installing a new School of Global Affairs. But it was some tricky games played. This executive branch, the president and a few others, they extended something called summer executive authority in 2009, which is designed to allow the university to keep functioning during summer when Governing Council doesn't meet. Now, what they did, they actually extended this special authority into fall 2009. So the October session of Governing Council was just simply not held. And lo and behold, that's when the Monk contract was signed. During that, right around that time. So that this kind of sneaky stuff to just get around Governing Council, and then months later, after this contract was signed in secret and not revealed, sort of little elements of it were made public, like the fact that there was going to be a School of Global Affairs was going to change its name to the Monk School of Global Affairs. So little snippets of the contract have been sort of floated past Governing Council. But the role of Governing Council, whose members are in part, elected, we have some student allies on that council, and faculty as well, they never did get the chance to exercise what their role is supposed to be, namely to look at this contract, to decide if it's in the best interest of the university according to the mandate of the university, which includes such, wonderful values such as human rights and academic integrity, which are directly threatened by the contract.
What kind of concerns does the campus community have about how the donation is going to influence what happens within that building or in the International Studies program?
Well, this whole Monk School of Global Affairs thing is, on the one hand, the contract stipulates that it has to house a right-wing think tank, essentially. It doesn't use those words, but there's a group that's sort of organized around the corporate elite of Canada called the Canadian International Council, and this group is the initiative of some really high-profile companies like Scotiabank, Power Corporation, Research in Motion, Goldcorp, Manulife, and Barrick, of course. And, people who have a lot of influence with the government and who are just looking out for corporate interests of Canada. So that's, that's just one thing. Another thing is that Barrick Gold has a few lawsuits underway against authors who have written books critical of Barrick Gold's operations and of the operations of other mining companies operating based in Canada around the world. So this whole, we call these SLAP lawsuits, they're called the strategic lawsuits against public participation, is clearly, at odds with any notion of academic integrity, of freedom of speech. And so to have a School of Global Affairs being named after and under the control of a mining baron who silences his critics with punitive lawsuits and who insists on having a right-wing think tank in the same building, I think that we get a sense of what kind of climate will exist at the Monk School. And also, we are looking a bit, there is already a Monk School of International Studies at U of T. So this is in some sense kind of an expansion and really pushing forward what is already happening. And, there are some, when we look at what goes on at present at the Monk School, a lot of critical scholars come through there, but precisely what's happening is that Monk is kind of taking over the university slowly. Other departments are getting pulled in with contracts with the Monk School, and certain professors are getting tempted with a totally different salary structure. So what we're concerned about is that there will be certain types of discourses and certain topics that will increasingly become off-limits and we have very good reason to believe so, looking at those lawsuits.
So you have concerns about the implications then of this donation for the university as a whole outside of that particular department?
Well, I would say on both levels, because the thing about this particular department is that the way it sets up, it is intended to run not only as a place where specific scholars work, but also through partnerships with many other departments. Essentially the many talks and projects and all kinds of research initiatives will be sort of co-sponsored by the Monk Center. And so the Monk Center has been signing contracts with other departments. So increasingly you see the Monk name and the Monk influence coming in and impacting the work of other departments, and professors sort of at some point deciding to sign up essentially with the Monk Project. Because that's where the money is now. Strangely enough, you know, the federal and provincial government were happy to fork over a lot of money for this Monk School, even as they claim that they can't afford to fund higher education anymore. So this kind of corporatization of the university is something that worries us, because the priorities for where we want to, how our university wants to develop, get dictated by a corporation that itself, you know, has obviously a conflict of interest in global affairs. They lobby the government against policies for any notion of responsible or ethical corporate behavior.
So now this is all happening at the same time as people at the U of T have been organizing around other issues. There's a group calling itself the General Assembly, and they've formed to make decisions to better represent the campus community. What role has this new organization played in your fight?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously the struggle against the university's anti-democratic administration is not restricted to our struggle, right? It's something that's been going on for years. All kinds of tuition increases, you know, installing flat fee tuition that marginalize students who work jobs or who have children. And, you know, in general, we've been seeing in the last few years, and especially this year, an increase in the administration's willingness to just ram through any kind of project in the face of student opposition. So there were some big battles over the academic plan earlier in the year that shut down a lot of departments that are seen to not be profitable. And, of course, over the summer, shutting down campus at the G20, allowing police to arrest hundreds of people that were just sleeping at the Graduate Student Union gym. So all kinds of decisions are made without even following even the facade of democracy that they're supposed to follow. So finally, the U of T General Assembly has just sort of brought together workers, students, faculty, members of the community to meet so far every month or two and formed working groups to address these issues and to say, well, you know, we're not happy with the governance of the university, so we're gonna put in place our own decision-making structure and challenge that governance openly. So within that, the anti-corporatization group has basically merged or linked up with the Monk Out of U of T campaign. And so now we're sort of have a lot of strength on that group. And we organized, we took advantage of Noam Chomsky's recent visit, and we got a whole bunch of people to rally in front of the latest governing council meeting. And we sort of stormed the meeting and were chanting against Monk, and they didn't let us into the meeting, which is the reason we had to sort of storm in. So I think we've really generated a lot of public awareness now. Some of the media were covering it. The word on the street is that Monk's sort of henchmen and women are kind of taking a lot of flack from him right now.
What kind of response have you received from the administration regarding the kind of criticism and actions that you've been doing?
Right. Well, the administration has responded with double talk and lies. So the president and the provost, David Naylor and Cheryl Misak, have both each written a letter that is just doesn't actually address our concerns, but refutes them without addressing them or engaging with them. And this is at a time when, you know, we have two well-respected faculty members who wrote a very detailed article that was published publicly with very detailed critiques about what the contract implied for academic integrity and sort of showing in detail how it threatened academic integrity. And so, but these administrators did not address that. The president actually claimed that, you know, he talked about Peter Munk's experience escaping from Hungary at the hands of Nazi persecution and being a U of T alumni, all this kind of stuff that is intended to make us sort of, I don't know, empathize with the person and say, oh, it's okay if he wants to take over our university. So it was really disgusting, actually, to see that their total refusal to engage. So we've just continued with our campaign of shoring up support for we have a petition online. We're nearing 600 signatures, and many, many faculty have signed, and there are also many faculty that we have yet to contact. So we're hoping to really send a strong message. And meanwhile, we keep doing actions. You know, the president of U of T did a little guest lecture in poli-sci for 1,300 students, and some of our friends went up and dropped a Munk out of U of T banner behind his head, and he didn't feel too comfortable with that. So, yeah, as long as they keep pretending there's no problem, we're going to get more and more people inside.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me today, Jacob, and I'm going to mention where people can track down that petition online so that if people are listening now, they want to sign it, they can find it.
Great. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Jacob Nierenberg. He's a doctoral student at the University of Toronto and an organizer with the Munk Out of U of T campaign. And Munk is spelt with a U. It's M-U-N-K. If you would like to find more information on the campaign, you can go to munkoutofuoft.wordpress.com, and that's where you can go to sign their petition. Or you can find it at petitiononline.com/munkoff.